It is time for Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for supporting Faith and Family. I've been a faithful underwriter for Faith and Family here on Worldwide KFUO for quite a while now. I believe since the inception of this program, going on almost 4 years soon. Well, they do a fine job at what they do at providing a valuable higher education experience, a Christian education to people all around the world, not just in Wisconsin. They have an education center here in St. Louis. Check them out, Concordia University, Wisconsin. A touching story today. Have you visited eyesoflife.org? It's a great collection of the stories of people, particularly life stories, how each person's life is unique and a gift from God. We have another Eyes of Life story to share with you today. Our guest today, the Reverend Phil Zielinski. He's a husband, a father, and a servant of the church. Pastor Zielinski, welcome to Faith and Family.
Great to be here with you, Andy. Thank you for having me.
Glad to have you as our guest today. Tell us about your multiple vocations. You're a pastor. You're at, St. Paul Lutheran Church, is that right?
St. Paul Lutheran Church in Valley City, Ohio, yep, just southwest of Cleveland. Been pastor here for, 2.5 years now. Time flies. And that's just one of my callings. Husband to Sarah since May of 1999, so we're coming up on 18 years of marriage. And then father to my five daughters since November of 2010.
And that's really the story that we're here to share today. But tell me about your background. I know that our paths crossed when we were students in college at Concordia University in River Forest in Chicago now, and have passed a few times as well when we play Lutheran bingo along the way in some of the places that we've served. And our paths have crossed as well, and a joy to have this time together with you today and reconnect and share your story. But when did you begin thinking about a family? Do you remember being a husband, being a father? When did those ideas start becoming, I guess, significant for you?
Yeah, growing up, I have one older brother. He's 4 years older than me. My mom is one of seven children. My dad is one of four children. And so mom coming from sort of a large family and dad coming from a family larger than my own, having lots of cousins to play with, having that that really a great blessing of aunts and uncles and cousins and those large family gatherings were always a really joyful part of growing up. So as moved toward marriage, as Sarah and I met at Concordia University in Chicago and River Forest there, and began our premarital counseling sessions with the pastor who would do our wedding up in Wayzata, Minnesota. You know, one of the questions on there was, have you talked about children? Have you talked about a family? And Sarah and I had talked about having children by birth, and we had already considered the possibility of adopting children as well, not really knowing what all went into that. Neither of us had a history with adoption, but really having a compassion for children who didn't have a mom and a dad to raise them and love them and make them feel secure. So I think there was already that seed was planted pretty early on in our relationship and as we were preparing for marriage.
And so the you mentioned that that the wedding happened in 1999. I believe was about the time we were finishing up college, if I remember. I think we might have been in separate programs.
Got married between my junior and senior year of college. Both our parents had kind of told us, make sure you finish college before you go off and run off and get married or anything like that. And the more and more we looked ahead toward the summer after graduation, it was going to be heading off to seminary to begin summer Greek, and we had many friends who were likely going to be having weddings that summer as well, and, you know, living on campus, unmarried, it just wasn't, you know, we were like, why are we waiting? You know, what's the point of putting this off another year? We're both going to finish our programs, and, you know, I looked into it, and it's like, wow, you know, we could rent a little apartment and, you know, handle our food things more, you know, our budgets and things more in our control. Let's talk to our parents about doing this. And so we got married between our junior and senior years, and she was 21 at our wedding. I was 20. And, you know, I look back now, and as I have a 15-year-old daughter now, I'm kind of thinking to myself, what in the world were my parents feeling at those moments? And it must have been pretty amazing for them as well.
So you and Sarah married and finished your studies at Concordia University, and then what came after that?
We moved to Fort Wayne, Indiana, where I began summer Greek at Concordia Theological Seminary there in Fort Wayne. And she received a teaching position at Central Lutheran School in New Haven, Indiana, just south and east of the Fort Wayne area, kind of just right adjacent suburb to Fort Wayne. And so I began my studies, and she began full-time teaching there at Central. Did my field work at the congregation, one of the three congregations that supported that school, and really plugged into that community there at Emmanuel in New Haven and the school there at Central, and met some really lifelong friends and family and influences on our lives right up into this day. It was really a tremendous blessing for us there.
How did congregational life shape your view of family and the perhaps what God had in store for you and Sarah as a family?
You know, congregational life, you know, starting off in seminary and working with kids in Sunday school and seeing kids at school with Sarah teaching, and one of our close friends there, one of the pastors there at Emmanuel, they had gone a long time without being able to conceive children, and then they were able to build their family as God blessed them. And sort of watching that all sort of take place and things was just really wonderful to be included in and be a part of. And, you know, began seeing very early on, just with balancing studies and being a husband, that balancing work and husband and father responsibilities and Sarah mom responsibilities was going to be very challenging. And we didn't really move forward with adoption or really, I guess, you know, sort of deliberately trying to build our family until 2006, after we had graduated seminary in 2004, and I served a congregation in Kansas City, Missouri for 2 years, and then returned to the seminary to do some STM work, and ended up working in the admission office there, and kind of reconnected with that Central Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran network of friends and support that we had there, and really feeling that stability and that connection to a really wonderful, nurturing community in that congregation and that school. And that community really helped us to feel like you know, we're going to have this support structure around us to build our family and see what God has to bless us with in this place.
When did adoption start becoming a more prevalent idea, or more prevalent in your conversations at home?
Yeah, so you know, going back all the way to those initial conversations in our premarital counseling, it was sort of like, okay, you know, family by birth, family by adoption, and let's just see what God has in store for us. 2006 turned into 2007 and 2008, and we hadn't conceived any children yet, and so we thought, well, let's check this out a little bit, and we did some medical work with an infertility doctor there in Fort Wayne, who some of our some other friends and acquaintances had worked with as well, and we began to see pretty clearly that wow, there are a lot of families, a lot of husbands and wives who are facing infertility, and we're really sort of wondering, how do we do this? You know, what is our role as Christians and God's plan for us in all this? And working with the doctors, we didn't find anything. There were no medical reasons for our infertility. There was just sort of medically undiagnosed infertility, no reason. So we were like, well, what do we do next? And looked at different medical procedures to assist in conception, and really run up against the next step being in vitro fertilization, where the eggs would be harvested and fertilized outside of Sarah's womb, and then would be implanted, and this brought up a number of sort of ethical issues for us. And we began sort of grappling with the whole science of in vitro fertilization and what that all meant, and became pretty clear that we were like, wow, we're really not coming to many answers here, but we're just not comfortable with this. There's just something sort of nagging at us that just doesn't feel like this is what God would have us do. And so we decided, well, let's just step away from it then. Instead of wondering, is it right or wrong and this, let's invest ourselves in something we know is right and God-pleasing, and in a way that we can be parents and raise children and express God's love in our family through adoption. And so it was at that point we said, all right, let's not go forward anymore with trying to conceive children by birth. Let's see what God has in store for us in opening our family through adoption.
So with the many questions surrounding surrounding infertility and the possibility of assistance in trying to conceive in vitro fertilization, and all the many questions that surrounded that, you were really prompted to move further into conversation about adoption and to investigate that option more. What did you find as you started looking into adoption more?
We found lots of paperwork. lots of challenges with paperwork and kind of where to begin. Our first question really is, well, do we look domestically? Do we look internationally? That was really our first question to ask, was, you know, do we want to do something domestic or international? Then when we had settled on, you know, all right, no, we're going to go international. Now the whole world is at our doorstep, literally. And you know, every family and every adoptive family is going to have, it's very much a vocational kind of thing where some people are going to be called to maybe one particular realm of adoption, an area of adoption. Others are going to be called and feel comfortable and compelled to pursue adoption in another aspect. Some like foster to adoption. That's my thing. We're going to do it domestically, and that's our thing. Great. Others are, you know what, we're going to go this area of the world or that area of the world, or kids with medical challenges, or kids with, you know, what we're really looking for is an infant adoption from some place, and just that's kind of what we're called to do. And as many different kids as that are out there that need moms and dads, there are people that God prompts to pursue adoption so that kids can have a mom and a dad who love them. So we started sorting through, you know, like, well, what cultural things do we feel comfortable with and traveling and all these kinds of things. And it actually narrowed down fairly quickly in the fact that we wanted to keep a sibling group together. And we had decided, you know, well, let's have a, you know, we're okay with a large family. So let's, you know, maybe we can keep a sibling group from getting broken up into many different homes or something. And Well, that narrowed down pretty quickly as far as which countries prioritize that and really do keep sibling groups together deliberately. So we settled on international. We settled on Latin America, South American, Spanish-speaking countries. And of those, Colombia was a country that deliberately kept sibling groups together as best as they were able and began looking into some international agencies that worked with Colombia.
And so did that involve... What steps did that involve as well? As you learned more about Colombia, did you make any visits?
We made just one visit to Colombia, and that was after we were placed and everything was already sort of green lighted with the girls. Because of the adoption relationship between the United States and Colombia, we're able to simply travel one time, and we received custody of them and began the court process in Colombia, and took about 4.5 or 5 weeks that we were in Colombia, and then returned home as a full family. So there was no sort of preliminary travel down there or anything like that. We worked initially stateside with an international adoption agency, and we worked with Children's Home Society and Family Services out of St. Paul, Minnesota, who has a large Colombia adoption program, but many other countries as well. And so they have their list of requirements. You know, here are the steps that you go through.
Let's go back to the day you found out your placement. When and how did you receive the news that that there was a sibling group waiting for parents?
Well, waiting is the right word. Kids with really anybody, any children in the adoption system, older than 2 years old or having any sort of medical challenges or are part of a sibling group, anything that really places them outside of sort of single infant adoption are classified as what they call waiting children. And some of their processes are expedited a little bit. And so because this was a sibling group of five girls and they were all over the age of two when we first were exploring this, they were on a waiting child list. And through Children's Home Society and Family Services, you're able to see sort of a listing of waiting children that that are in their system right now that are needing a family. And so before we even were placed with them or matched with our daughters, you know, we're sort of looking through through these snippets of stories and came across one listing. There's like first initials is all you get. So there was a children, five, females, five, Y, L, V, Y, and Y. We're like, wow, that's Y, three Y names. What did that end up being? That piqued our curiosity. And just a short description of a very tight-knit group of sisters who have been in their system for a while. And we're like, oh, okay. Week or two later, we're sort of paging through that again and many, you know, sort of many dreams and many daydreams of what our family might look like in a few months' time or a year's time. And, well, there's that listing again, but now it's two listings. There's a listing of three girls and two girls, and with sort of the little note that says, you know, if you adopt one of these two groups, we want you to have a very deliberate, connected relationship with the other family because this is a pretty tight-knit group of sisters. So we called the agency and said, hey, this is exactly what we want to keep together. This is exactly what we want to do. They said, that's really wonderful. That's great. We don't have any of your paperwork yet. You really need to get on that because we can't place you or reserve anybody until we get that. So hurry. And so we did. We started our paperwork at that time with sort of this group of kids in mind. No names, no faces, no anything other than you know, there's this group of five sisters that we felt very compelled to try to keep together as a unit.
Why was adoption so important to you? What does, as you're going through this process, and I'm sure the many challenges, you know, as you mentioned, the paperwork and the hurdles that you quite often have to go through in adoption, why was this so important to you to seek out these children who were waiting for a home, for a family?
It was really our calling that every child deserves a mom and a dad who love them and can have a nurturing home and can be raised by a mom and a dad who love and care for them when that's possible. And you know, as children of God, as created in the image of God, where husbands and wives are called to procreate, to be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and be blessed with children as God so sees fit. When that was not happening for us, and then we said, okay, you know, this is not God's plan for us. You know, what is God's plan for us? And so it wasn't even kind of a, well, that didn't work, what's plan B? It was more like, well, you know, this calling in life to procreate is not something God is giving us, but He's going to give us something else. You know, He has called us to something. You know, what is that He's calling us to? And that compassion for the fatherless and the orphan, the child without a mom and a dad who love them and are able to raise and care for them, was, you know, that was our opportunity to say, you know what, we can show God's love and embrace that calling as parents through adoption, and this is what God's providing for us. And so, you know, let's give these kids that opportunity that maybe they wouldn't have otherwise. It was kind of the reason we decided to go with an international program. You know, for right or wrong, I don't necessarily know that this is the case, but we sort of figured if a child in the U.S. system, you know, do they already have, you know, a certain number of advantages over other parts of the world or other countries and things? And, you know, the more I've learned about the rest of the world and things, I think our foster system and foster-to-adopt system in the United States is very good. We care deeply about our children here in the United States, and there are many opportunities for them. And I'm so thankful for the families that embrace domestic adoption and are able to give those kids every opportunity there. Our feeling was, you know, let's open the door for some of these opportunities to kids who maybe wouldn't have them otherwise. And so we went with the international program and said, you know, let's be parents. Let's bring love and stability to this group of sisters that aren't experiencing it right now.
Today we're talking with Phil Zielinski. He's a pastor, a husband, and a father. He and his wife, Sarah, adopted five children. We're sharing their story, and you can read more of their story on eyesoflife.org. We'll share a link of it with today's program as well. We need to take a quick break. When we come back from that break, we'll hear more about how the Zielinski family has grown. You're listening to Faith and Family on Worldwide KFUO.
Concordia University, Wisconsin in Mequon overlooks a half mile of beautiful Lake Michigan shoreline. CUW campus is located 15 miles north of Milwaukee, with over 70 undergraduate majors, 28 graduate degree programs, and doctorate programs in pharmacy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and nursing practice. CUW offers online learning and accelerated learning at one of 9 Wisconsin centers and one in St. Louis. Traditional or accelerated education, CUW has the program for you. CUW.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, president of Life Issues Institute.
The Johnson Amendment was slipped into the tax code in the 50s. It prevents any church or other 501c3 organization from endorsing or opposing political candidates, even for biblical reasons. As a candidate, Donald Trump promised to eliminate this violation of First Amendment rights for pastors and organizational leaders. The Free Speech Fairness Act was introduced in the House and Senate, and we need to support it. Imagine the impact churches could have in electing godly leaders if they chose to do so. It simply allows them to participate in political speech. Please contact your members of Congress and ask them to support the Free Speech Fairness Act. Visit lifeissues.org and click on the microphone icon for links to your elected officials.
For more information, visit our website at lifeissues.org and stay informed, more informed than you've ever been.
I'm Gary Duncan, the General Manager of Worldwide KFUO. We promote our various programs. We ask you to listen to your favorite show. We ask you to support our broadcast ministry, and we thank you for that support. But maybe we don't ask you to pray for us as much as we should. Please pray for the staff, management, radio hosts, and volunteers here at Worldwide KFUO. Pray that the message of salvation through Christ is heard clearly by listeners around the world. Pray that we continue to reach into those areas that are hostile to the Word of God. Pray that KFUO continues to reach those people desperately needing to hear the good news message. And pray that God continues to bless us financially through the gifts we need to continue our broadcast ministry. Thank you for listening, supporting, and praying for Worldwide KFUO. You truly are appreciated. We are the messenger of good news, AM 850 in St. Louis, worldwide at KFUO.org.
Wednesday on Issues Etc., we'll discuss Norma McCorvey, the Jane Roe of Roe v. Wade, with Clark Forsythe. We'll talk with Pastor Jonathan Fisk about Christians, contraception, and the future of the family. And we'll get a bio on first century pastor and martyr Polycarp from Dr. Carl Beckwith.
Issues Etc., live weekday afternoons from 3 to 5 on KFUO.
This is Jedi John Lekumsky
and Jedi Matt Clark.
Bring your droids for 30 minutes of intensive Bible study
and Jedi training
on Wrestling with the Basics.
Saturday mornings at 9:05 on KFUO AM 850.
Or on demand at KFUOAM.org.
Whoa.
May the Force be with you.
And also with you.
Saturday mornings at 9 on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
Imagine if I told you that an earthquake was going to hit tomorrow right where you live. That it would be 6.5 in magnitude with aftershocks occurring twice 25 minutes apart. You'd no doubt talk with your loved ones and you'd make a plan today. It's true, I can't tell you an earthquake will happen tomorrow. But what if it does? Shouldn't you have a plan? Go to ready.gov/communicate and make your emergency plan today. Don't wait. Communicate. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm Andy Bates. We're talking with the Reverend Phil Zielinski. He and his wife, Sarah, adopted five children, five daughters, and sharing their Eyes of Life story today here on Faith and Family. Now, Phil, before we went to break, talking about when you found out about that you'd been placed, that there were five girls who were waiting for a family, and you mentioned that you'd traveled to Colombia to begin the official process, and you were there for I think you said about 4 weeks. Is that right?
Yeah, 4.5, 5 weeks. And that was at the tail end of a lot of other paperwork and dossier and writing and fingerprinting and background checking and everything else. But yeah.
When did you finally get to meet these five beautiful faces?
It was a little surreal. The day we met them face to face the first time, we had received some photographs in I believe it was May of 2010. We had we got the actual referral papers for us to consider and to accept, and had photographs of the girls and even some video of them in the orphanage, and just to begin evaluating various aspects of things. And you know, it was a pretty short deliberation to say, you know, yes, this is the placement we'd like to move forward with. And so, you know, here we had then their faces and their full names, and didn't exactly know how to pronounce them at that point. But we did our best and kept them in our prayers and kept a photograph that we would carry around with us that we couldn't really share with anybody at that point yet, and not being official yet, couldn't share somebody else's information or anything. But continued through that process, paperwork. And then in November of 2010, we finally got that call that said, well, you have your travel authorization. And that was on a Thursday of first Thursday in November 2010, and I remember I was getting ready for our congregation's 130th anniversary weekend we were going to have coming up, and we had a special preacher coming. We had Wally Schultz coming in to preach, and special music, and all these things happening. We get this phone call that says, well, you can travel. How fast can you get here? And I said, well, tomorrow's probably out of the question, but let me see what we can do. And began working on our travel documents. And that night we went to Chicago and got our visa. You have to have a visa to go to Columbia for the purpose of adoption. And then Friday came back to Van Wert, where we lived, and started working on got our plane tickets, and it was all set to go. We were going to fly out on Tuesday morning, so just that fast. From Thursday to Tuesday, we were kind of 0 to 90 miles an hour right at that point. And so announced it to the congregation on Sunday. By the way, we're leaving on Tuesday. See you when we see you. And they were wonderfully supportive. And so we flew out early Tuesday morning to Columbia. Arrived late that night, slept sort of fitfully in the hotel, just sort of anxiously awaiting what the next day would bring. Wednesday morning, we were picked up by our wonderful guide named Vicky, who worked for the orphanage and for the adoption agency, drove us to the orphanage where the girls were living. Filled out a little paperwork. We're having conversation with the workers there and things. And then out the window, out of the corner of my eye, I caught this group of girls being led across the street by one of their caregivers. And I just my heart leapt into my throat. I couldn't believe it. I just kind of looked out the window and I was like, they're real. I've seen pictures and I've seen faces, but there they are. They're just right there. And walked across the street and into the room where we were, and kind of got down low onto my knees so I could see them more eye to eye. I'm 6'3", and these are, you know, 8, 6'5", 4, and 3-year-old. They're kind of looking at me like, he's a giant. And Sarah and I just were just filled with such joy and to see this really coming together. And it was a lot of emotions all at once right there, but gave them some hugs and said hello and just sort of began that little dance of getting to know one another, getting to learn a little bit about each other.
I'm sure that's a very unusual moment, talking with children from 3 to 8 years old. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah. All in Spanish. They spoke no English. Sarah was is pretty accomplished in Spanish. I knew very little, bits and pieces. And so we were able to, you know, say hello and point to a few different things. And just trying to say hello. And, you know, it's the shyness and uneasiness. I can't imagine the apprehension or the mixed emotions that they would be feeling at that moment, where it was, you know, here are these two strangers. I mean, we're strangers to them, mm-hmm. who are smiling to see us and would love to give us, you know, want to hug us, and we're going to go live with them. And I can't imagine the mixed up emotions that they were feeling at those moments, having anticipated having a forever home, but not really knowing what that meant, and who are these two people, and why are they so tall, and why are they so white, and all these things that, it must have been just incredible for them, too.
And had any of them grasped the concept of moving to another part of the world, to another country, another community, where the language is different than what I've grown up with?
Yeah, I don't know if they still have, you know, 6.5 years later. I think it's still a little surreal for them sometimes. The orphanage, you know, did a lot of work with them on, you know, little workbooks and things on, you know, this is, you know, where I'm going, there's going to be four seasons, and we wear different things throughout the year, and here's a globe, and here's where I live now, and here's where they're going, you know, here's where I'm going to live.
Here's a magical land called Ohio.
Right, yeah, yeah. their first experience with America, you know, we briefly stopped off in Miami through the airport, but never left the building. Landed in Chicago in December in record cold.
Oh, that's a rude awakening.
Oh man, it was. They had never seen their breath before. They had never seen snow before, and so that was sort of their rude awakening to North American United States weather. Was they walked outside into the parking garage at O'Hare Airport, and just all the air just leapt out of their lungs. They just went, you know, and just they ran back inside and, you know, put all the rest of the winter clothes we had brought along onto them to try to keep them comfortable.
Oh, their hearts I'm sure your heart was warmed, but to venture into that Chicago cold.
It was pretty incredible. They still talk about what that felt like the first time. They just said, we never felt anything so cold. We didn't even know what to expect.
So how much had you been able to prepare before you left to meet your children? How much had you been able to prepare your home and get ready for a home that had once been two adults, one guy, one girl, now one guy, six women in the house?
Well, we added a bathroom and a shower, and we added an extra sink basin and about a 4x8 mirror in the upstairs bathroom. That was one way to prep. I was serving a congregation in Van Wert, Emmanuel Lutheran in Van Wert, who were just incredibly gracious and supportive and excited for us to bring our family home. And you know, from the time we began our paperwork until bringing them home, I actually was laid off from one job and took a call to serve in Ohio. So we had started paperwork in Indiana and then had to begin paperwork all over again in Ohio and in a new home. And it was all just sort of very surreal in that respect, that we're like, what is God's plan in all this? Well, the congregation in Van Wert had helped their previous pastor also through an adoption process in Guatemala. And so they were sort of like, we know how to do this. And that was kind of an exciting meeting too, sitting down with the call committee and kind of telling them, well, you know, let's talk about the parsonage a little bit. You see two of us sitting here, but there's really going to be seven of us. And they just like, they almost got whiplash at how fast they looked over to Sarah, like, what? And, like, well, we're in the adoption process. And they said, oh, well, we know how to do this. We just helped our pastor do this who previously. And, you know, their experience with it and things, they were very gracious about it, and were able to help prepare that home for to make room for five additional little girls. And they were tremendously helpful. So, yeah, so we rounded up beds, you know, over this 9-month paperwork process. It was rounding up beds, and it was painting rooms and getting dressers. And we were tremendously blessed by donations of clothing that actually we still we're really still drawing from. People, you know, donated clothing to us, and we were able to put them in bins and sort them by size and age, and we're getting down to the last bits of that now, just 6 years later, and we're still taking the girl shopping down in the basement in the bins, and they were just so helpful in prepping all those things and hosting pancake breakfasts and being flexible with, well, you know, pastor's going to be gone for you know, maybe 6 weeks or longer. How do we make this work? And they were very good about it, and it was pretty amazing.
What does that say about a church? What does that say about a church body and what we teach, what we believe regarding life and family, God's order, God's structure for family? What does that say about the church when they were so very willing and very generous and happy to help you in this process of your family growing?
Oh, it speaks volumes to the importance of life at every stage and in every situation. How Christians, as the children of God, can really embrace life and help those at any stage of life. You know, whether it's helping moms and dads figure out, you know, what's next in life when this pregnancy is unexpected or scary, and being able to reach out with compassion there, or reach out with compassion as a family is brought home and built in a brand new way through adoption or foster care, or just the generosity that this congregation expressed, that the community around us expressed, that the congregation I serve now in Valley City expresses, just this tremendous generosity and appreciation for the gift of life that God has given, not just the girls who are my daughters, but all kids, all families, and people at any stage of need in their life, just speaks volumes to how much compassion, how much generosity there really is because of God's love for us.
What was it like making that transition from in a household of two to a household of seven? Tell me about some of the joys and challenges.
You say transition. Transition suggests something gradual.
Or overnight.
It was transition like a crash test dummy. it was just incredible. I didn't know. I think parents, when they bring a baby home, you know, there's this moment of, I don't know if I can do this. I have to trust my instincts, but I don't know what I'm doing exactly. And for me as a dad, and now I've got five girls, and it's like, I don't know how to do this. I grew up with a brother, and I don't know, leaning a lot on Sarah and just trying to explain things from Spanish into English and back and forth. And it was just sort of learning those little routines of, well, what do they like to eat and how do they like to eat, and bedtime routines, and, you know, here's brushing your teeth, and here's all these various things. And it was just those little bits and pieces, I think, like all parents do as they're welcoming their children into their home. It's sort of, you can prepare as much as you want, but in the end, you kind of make it up as you go along, because you just don't know what the needs are going to be at any particular moment. And so you just try to stay flexible and adaptable and let that unconditional love for your children drive, you know, the making that best decision of what's next. And so it was definitely different to wake up and have a, you know, pile of kids and dogs laying, you know, all over, and you know, you're making breakfast, and it's you know, you go through it 24 eggs instead of two. And just all kinds of new experiences for them too.
You mentioned earlier, you know, when you first met the girls, your wife is proficient in Spanish. Your skills were somewhat limited. Were there other cultural differences that presented some challenges?
Oh, yeah. You know, we felt so blessed to be able to be in Colombia for an extended period of time. It really gave us a chance to learn to love and appreciate the country where our children were born. We spent the first few days in a hotel, and then we actually moved into a apartment complex. We rented an apartment for a month in the city of Medellin, which is over 2 million people. We got an apartment across from a mall, and would go grocery shopping and walk around with the girls and see things. And food was one of those interesting things because it's sort of meat and potatoes, and it's just really delicious, and all sorts of tropical fruits and that we had never heard of, like grenadilla and lulo and just these wonderful fruits and things. And then there's like the little things, like you buy milk in a bag. It's in a pouch and it's on the shelf. It's not even refrigerated. They ultra pasteurize it and it's in a special bag where it's actually shelf stable and warm, and it's just sitting on the shelf. And I'm like, I don't get that. How is that even possible? And mustard and ketchup come in these little pouches instead of bottles. And you, to find salad dressing, you had to go to the ethnic section of the supermarket, and there's the American section, and there's salad dressing. Oh, I can get Italian salad dressing here finally. And it's just the little things like that, I guess, that made us laugh.
What about for the girls and finding their new home in Ohio?
Yeah, that was it was such an interesting time for them because we travel home and we move in and we kind of show them their bedrooms and really this idea that no, this is yours. It's not sort of yours for now and then everybody, it's sort of community property later. No, it's like that's your doll and that's your stuffed animal and these things. And it's just, that was a little different because the orphanage, you're very communal there at the orphanage. Everything was kind of public access. And so to sort of settle into that sense of, wow, this is mine, and exploring around, where do I keep my things? And, where's my little cubby hole for storing away my little treasures? And meeting our dog for the first time was pretty exciting for them. She's a 70-some-odd pound German Shepherd Lab mix, and they were usually kind of very afraid of dogs, and so we were sort of wondering, what is this going to be like? And she came home. My parents brought her, who had been watching her, and they all piled up on the top of a top bunk, and the dog came in and was just happy to see everybody in the world. She's just a very friendly dog. And there she was at the bottom of this bunk bed looking up at these five girls wondering, well, when do we get to play? And they finally settled into that. And she's been a wonderful blessing to those girls, too, to show them unconditional love and that they can love her without any apprehensions or anything. So,
ironically, even the dog is a girl.
Yeah, even the dog's a girl, yeah.
How has adoption changed your household? How has it changed your marriage? And furthermore, we'll get to how has it changed your view on life issues?
Yeah, parenting and children in a family definitely bring change to your relationship as spouses and as a pastor and just as a man, going from being husband and to husband and father. And it's not without its difficulties and challenges. There's more demands on your time and attention, and you just feel pulled in a million different directions. And Satan really likes to pit our vocations one against another. And it's like, when you're invested into one part of your calling in life, you're always feeling like, well, should I be you know, am I neglecting another part of it? And so there's always just sort of this inner tension of balance that you're looking for. Families that adopt are also experience, a lot of turmoil in those transition times for the children. Whatever their background may have been, the fact that they're not living with their birth parents and in an international situation, they're not living in their country of birth anymore, hearing the language that they're used to, smells, tastes, these different things, this is all very traumatic it's very profound for these kids. And, maybe they have a lot of anger with their birth parents or their life or whatever it is, and they only have one place to put it, and that's on their adoptive parents, their mom and dad now. And that manifests itself in so many different ways for adoptive couples and adoptive families. There's that struggle of, well, is this normal kid stuff or is this adoption related stuff, or how do we discipline but let them know they're still loved, and so they don't confuse it with maybe their history of abandonment or abuse. And it just takes a lot of adapting as a parent to figure out, well, how I was raised, maybe that, that's what I'm going to mimic at first. And it's like, well, that's not going to work necessarily. And so you have to try to adapt. And there are a lot of challenges and a lot of struggles in those, in getting that attachment with the kids.
What, we have just about a minute and a half here as we wrap up. What would you like other families to know as they're considering adoption?
As you prayerfully consider it a great joy and a great calling from God to live out a calling as a parent by adopting. And God is going to build families in wonderful ways that we don't even never expect. Take a look at the stories on Eyes of Life, because there's some great stories that show that what we expect in life and our plan to go is not always what God has in mind for us. And there are blessings out there that we didn't even know were waiting for us. And to really consider it a great joy and to be ready for the challenges that come. But all parenting involves challenges and gains and losses and sorrows and joys. It's all going to be there. It's not necessarily going to be a fairy tale trip, but it's worth it. It's a wonderful calling to be a parent, no matter how God blesses you with that calling in life, and to really be ready for great joys in that gift of being a parent.
Well, thanks be to God for this great gift. Phil, thanks so much for sharing your story of your beautiful family today, and God's blessings as you continue to learn and grow together as a family and as parents, as you and Sarah continue on in this vocation of parenting.
Well, I want to give my love to my wonderful wife, Sarah, and my five girls, Yulisa, Lorena, Valeria, your ladies, and Yesenia. And I know they're listening, and just tell them that I love them very much, and we're glad and hope that others are inspired to build their families and be a mom and a dad and be a family for other kids too.
Very good. Thanks so much, Phil, for being my guest. You can share, or you can see their story on eyesoflife.org. Look for Phil on there, and we'll share it with the link with today's program as well. Thanks so much, Phil Zielinski.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Andy.
Coming up in just a little bit, Thy Strong Word, the messenger of good news.
Listen to Faith and Family Monday through Friday at this time. Faith and Family is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for Faith and Family to continue. Our address is 1333 South Kirkwood Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63122. You can contact us on the web and download Faith and Family at KFUO.org. Worldwide KFUO, on the air, online, and on demand.